Dillingham to Morgan Williams, 3 seconds from the top of the key, drives, right of the lane, jumper is gone! And Mississippi State wins! The Bulldogs storm the floor as they shock Connecticut! One of the biggest upsets in women's college basketball history!
2 days later, Mississippi State lost to South Carolina in the title game, but Morgan Williams' buzzer beater is no doubt another great moment.
While there aren't any football games, there's never really an off-season. Stay in the know with ESPN 1320, Sacramento's home of the Niners.
The NBA last night, the Atlanta Hawks defeat the Hornets in a double overtime thriller, 143-138. Trae Young finishes with 31 points, 16 assists. It's his third game with 30 points and at least 15 assists this season, the most in the NBA and the most by any player since the 2016-2017 season. Terry Rozier had a career-high 40 points in a losing effort for Charlotte. Meanwhile, out west, the Nuggets beat the Bucks 109-95. The third straight loss for the Bucks, the longest losing streak under Mike Budenholzer. The Nuggets are the second team this season to beat the Bucks twice, joining the Heat. Both the Nuggets' wins came by double digits. Giannis Antetokounmpo, Chris Middleton, Marvin Williams, Brooke Lopez, and Dante DiVincenzo all out of the lineup for the Bucks.
Dante.
Jamal Murray also tried to kill that guy. That was terrifying.
It was awesome.
I'm going to keep highlighting that because it shook my soul. And in the world of college hoops, UConn, the women defeat Cincinnati 87-53, winning their seventh straight AAC title. They end their tenure in the AAC 139-0, the second longest conference win streak, including tournament play, since in D1 history. The final game as an AAC member before moving to the Big East next season.
SportsCenter brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Straight Talk Wireless has the full court cell phone coverage you need. Get the unlimited plan, 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G for just $45 a month, saving you up to half the cost of the big carriers. Everything for less. Savings may vary. Check out terms and conditions at straighttalk.com.
What is the panic level involving the coronavirus?
Realistically, it's about one. People are not panicking yet, but they are taking precautions.
In the wake of the coronavirus threat, among its short-term recommendations is that players should use fist bumps over high fives with fans.
MLS is the only league that does not have its teams fly chartered flights on a regular basis. Everybody else does. If no one on the team is infected, no one on the plane is going to be infected. You may be able to play in front of an empty stadium and keep the practice facility spotless, but then you're going to get on a plane and someone gets infected that way.
All right, Golic and Wingo with you on a Tuesday morning. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Penzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here. And I guess the question you have to ask yourself if you're a fan of sports in this country is the future short-term for U.S. sports, what we're seeing in Italy, where the outbreak of the coronavirus is significantly worse and significantly more spread than it is here in the States. But they've essentially shut down sports until the beginning of April to try and stop the spread of the coronavirus. And the news came out yesterday that the NBA, the NHL, the MLB, Major League Baseball, and MLS are working in conjunction together to close access to locker rooms and clubhouses to all non-essential personnel in a response to try and stop the spread of the coronavirus. The league said they made the decision after consultation with infectious disease and public health experts. The NBA, in a call with teams earlier Monday, stressed that the move is not a ban of reporters, but to ensure the safety of players and staff in those areas. And what they're basically doing, guys, is setting up interview situations or neutral sites in the arenas where the players, much like post-NCAA tournament games,
right,
where the players will sit on a stage and the reporters will be in front of them and ask the questions that way, and setting one-on-one interaction.
Basically
in the locker
room. 6 to 8 feet,
yes,
they want between the reporters and the player. So this is one way they're starting to do it. Again, is you wonder sometimes, okay, you have to try something. And they're trying this because we've already heard coaches say, wait a minute, we were talking about players not shaking hands. They're playing against each other and sweating on each
Correct.
Other and doing all those things. Now you're saying, yeah, but don't shake hands. I mean, it sounds somewhat ridiculous. But I think people understand you have to try some precautions, and we're getting there. We have a few other instances of what's going on, but right now this is where they're going to start and say, okay, this is one place in a smaller group, because we're the next thing we're going to be talking about is a bigger group. In a smaller group, we can kind of control the access and proximity.
And I'm sure the thought process is, all right, there's a lot of media members that come from a lot of different places. Like, again, if you try and game how things like this would spread, people who are involved with traveling all over and coming into these instances where it's close interactions, it's all right, let's protect the product first, right? Like, you're trying to make sure that the players on the court are insulated from all of this.
I think one of the best explanations, and we have it, was about the Indian Wells.
Yes.
And why they canceled that. I mean, there were, you know, we understand overall the parameters, but I thought this explanation was really, really good.
Absolutely, and I think it's why you're going to see perhaps different rules set up in different places. This is Tisha Thompson, an ESPN investigative reporter on SportsCenter, basically explaining why, with I think just one case in the Coachella Valley, which is about 110 miles east of Los Angeles in the Palm Springs, Indian Wells, Palm Desert, Rancho Mirage area, why they canceled the PNB Parabay Tennis Open this week, basically because of the unique threat, the potential contamination of the virus had to that specific community.
So at Indian Wells, 59% of the population is over 65 years old. On top of that, half of the cases that have been reported in the United States are in California and Washington State. On top of that, the tournament at Indian Wells can pull in upwards of 450,000 people from all over the world. And those are the kinds of decisions that the CDC and local health departments are taking into account for why they cancel an event.
So I get it. I mean, you can see where...
I mean, my parents live out there. There are a lot of elderly people in that part of the country, so, and that's where the coronavirus has been the most deadly.
We've heard internationally where they're canceling sporting events together. Where are we now? Where there's a few places. Stanford. On March 5th, Stanford officials announced they're limiting public attendance on campus sporting events to a third of the venue's capacity through at least April 15th. Now, that could also impact the first two rounds of the NCAA women's basketball tournament, because Stanford is expected to be one of the host schools for the March 21st through 23rd games. Division III men's basketball tournament in Baltimore on March 5th, citing concerns, they've decided the opening rounds of that will be held without spectators, so no fans will be at those games. The ECAC hockey quarterfinals, Harvard at RPI in Troy, New York on March 13, 14, and 15 will be played behind closed doors. No spectators at that. And then this tennis event being canceled. So we're starting to see some where spectators are going to be, you know, not permitted in these buildings.
All of this is Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And the other thing Tisha said on SportsCenter, which I thought was interesting, is that the CDC wants local health groups and local governments to make decisions on their own before they feel like they're going to enact some larger ban. And for example, Santa Clara County in California has basically said there's going to be a 3-week ban of gatherings of people of 1,000 or more beginning Wednesday. Well, the San Jose Sharks play in Santa Clara County. The San Jose Earthquakes of the MLS play in Santa Clara County. And Stanford, as you mentioned, also plays there. Stanford says at this point all scheduled athletic events on the Stanford campus will go on. But I think this is why we're going to see different things in different situations, because the outbreak may be different and the reaction to the outbreak and how it affects the population in certain areas could be vastly different in one area or another.
And I hope we are judicious with that. Like, the cynic in me looks at this and sees areas where there is not financial incentives for fans to be in seats for the fans to be removed, and areas where it is still financially beneficial for fans to be around there. Like that, I can't lie. That's my initial reaction looking at this is, all right, we're going to pull people out of locker rooms, but we're not going to pull them out of stands yet. But the idea that everywhere is different and that geographically, population breakdown, there are different things to factor in here, makes enough sense to me to where I have to look at that and say, all right, and again, this whole situation is predicated on you have to trust the medical personnel that are making these decisions, and that these people that have dedicated their lives to this craft are going to lead us in the right direction.
And one thing you're hearing from a lot of people in the medical field is the term flatten the curve, which is not necessarily to end the virus, but in other words, get the spike down where it's under this threshold where hospitals can deal with a lot of this stuff, because a lot of hospitals now are being overrun with people rushing in with a slight fever or a cough, and they're concerned, and they're getting flooded. So many hospitals are having trouble finding their own surgical masks and all this. I mean, this is beginning to be a part of a real burden on the healthcare system in the country.
And I guess that's why I look at it and say, all right, at some point, these crowds are going to have to be a part of this, right? Because
Exactly. If
you've got groups of 10 to 30,000 to, in some cases, more than that people all congregating together, and forget just the small amount of interactions between player and media, concession stands, moving through crowds at sporting events, all these places that are just petri dishes for almost anything you'd imagine.
Well, I mean, and we're getting there right now, right to your point, as far as money is concerned, what are two huge things that are coming up this month? The NCAA tournament.
Yep.
And Major League Baseball opening.
Correct.
Opening day, you know, that's all coming up, where now you're not talking about, you know, lower divisions or a third of the people. You're talking about tens of thousands of people for an overall tournament, hundreds of thousands of people. And what are you going to do? Because I don't know if anybody thinks at this point it's going to get better before it gets even a little worse.
Yeah, and here's Myron Metcalf, who does a great job for us on college basketball, on with Spain and Company. Basically, now, this is not him reporting. This is him saying what he believes could be going forward. This is just his opinion at this point.
At this point, they plan to have games with fans, but I'm not convinced we'll see that. I mean, I actually would be surprised if the NCAA tournament starts next week and you see fans in the crowd. I just think it's difficult to imagine with everybody canceling and not allowing fans in games. I'm not sure why the NCAA tournament would do something different. So my guess is we'll still have the games because you can televise them, but I have a hard time imagining crowds of 20, 30, 40, 50,000 showing up to NCAA tournament games.
Right, so that's the NCAA. Then there's also the NBA that was part of this joint statement with Major League Baseball, MLS, and the NHL. And our own NBA insider, Adrian Wojnarowski, basically says the NBA is preparing for the idea of playing without fans, but has not gotten to that point yet.
You talk to team executives, you talk to owners, and more they are bracing for that very possibility. They were told by the league to prepare for the possibility that was going to happen before the end of the regular season. The league office is still a little more cautious with that, saying we're not there yet. We don't have any recommendations to take fans out of the building. But when you talk to teams, they believe that chance is increasing with every day.
I mean, I think that you have to prepare for everything, but at some point, you have to also be willing to sort of, okay, we're actually doing this, right? I mean, at some point, there's going to be a tipping point for not only the NCAA, not only the NBA, but also potentially opening day in Major League Baseball. Well, we have to, there is going to be a deadline where they have to make a decision on this, and that's coming sooner rather than later.
And people at that point are going to need to swallow a bit of, you know, pride and ego and all that stuff. Like, when it comes to this, if we are told at some point it's medically prudent to not play these games in front of people, everyone involved like has to just kind of understand their role in that, right?
Yes.
Like, all right, we're going to go out there and play. Fans aren't going to be there. This is for everyone's best interest. That includes financial partners and all these things. The people that are standing to lose a lot of money and revenue off this are going to have to kind of understand. Like, it's going to take everybody having to eat a little bit of money in the short term to understand that if this is what we have to do, it needs to be done without a lot of complaining.
Yeah, I mean, basically the entire country of Italy is now quarantined. I mean, this is how much it's spread over there. It started in the north, and they were going to quarantine the top, but now they said, hold on a minute now. We've got to shut this thing down, and we've got to make sure. And there will be no sporting events played until April 3rd now at this point.
So does that get here? That's the question.
Does it get to that level here?
Does it get to that level here? It's going to be, obviously, I think, fans first that are not going to be in arena, and then you just take away the games altogether. And when I say, is it going to get worse before it gets better, you know, I don't know from the medical side. I mean, I have no answer to that, but I just, you know, when are we flattening out and then starting on the downtrend? We know it's going to happen at some point, but we have no idea.
If we take the right precautions.
We have no idea where we are right now with that. I mean, that's why everybody, you're told, listen to your local, you know, medical people. On the news every day, I know here, you know, they're telling you precautions to take. All that's where we all need to listen and kind of do what they want us to do. And to your point, not really give a whole lot of kickback, you know, and just understand this is where we are right now. In some cases, some people think it's overdone. They're going overboard with this. They're doing too much. But, you know, when people are getting sick and people are dying, I don't think there's ever a position where you're going, you know what, I don't think we should be doing this, and I'm going to kick back on it. It doesn't seem to be the time or the place.
We are trying to get a handle on something we don't fully understand yet.
Correct.
So, yeah, exercising caution there is not the worst thing in the world. Like,
no.
we could do a lot worse. And so this is like a good ramp for everyone to start preparing yourself for the idea. Yeah, we may have a bunch of sporting events very soon played without anybody in the crowd. And that's going to be strange, and it's going to create some weird visuals and circumstances, and a lot of people are going to be inconvenienced. But we know what the end goal is of that, hopefully. And again, when we talk about, I mean, you've got four leagues that came out yesterday and have put together, I heard Jeff DePassen describe it as like a joint task force.
Correct.
To do all this. You don't see that happen very often. Like,
not.
When you start to see these circumstantial outliers start to pop up, you realize, all right, we're dealing with something a little different, and so the approach is going to have to be a little different.
Will they, if the time comes, be able to take the next step, though? Because I get you don't start with the massive step first, but this was an easy step to take, right?
Yes, I agree.
Let's distance ourselves from the media. All right, you still can talk. There's got to be a barrier there. So does it get to the point where they will always see a joint statement saying no fans? Because now, again, that's you're starting to address the pocketbook, and that's when it can get somewhat interesting for people. Yeah,
and again, that's the point I come back to, because you saw there were some media members that were upset about the lack of access.
Well,
all that
the Professional
stuff.
Writers Association for the NBA, NHL, MLB, MLS, as well as the Pro Football Writers of America and the Associated Press sports editors responded to the closure with their own joint statement. We're concerned with the developing international outbreak of coronavirus, but we need, basically they're saying, we need access in the locker rooms to do our jobs.
And they're still getting access. Yes. They're still getting access to the players, but it's not what it was. So there has to be concessions made everywhere, and I guess that's my point to the cynic in us at times. Okay, this was a move you could do. It's not affecting any pocketbook. But at some point, the things are already happening that are going to affect the bottom line, and that's where it can teeter a little bit.
Yeah. So again, just by the raw numbers, just so people understand what we're talking about here, more than 113,000 people worldwide have tested positive for the disease, and more than 3,900 with the virus have died, most of those in China. More than 62,000 people have already recovered. The virus right now has infected 600 people or so in the U.S., including the director of the agency that runs airports in New York and New Jersey, and at least 26 have died, most of those in a nursing home, though, in Washington State. So, look, it is something to be concerned with, but it is the question is, where does concern go over to caution, and when does concern go over to panic? And I think that's the fine line that everybody's trying to find, because again, congregating a lot of people together is the easiest way for someone who doesn't know they have this virus to spread it. And what do you do? What are the simplest ways to avoid doing that? And that's why all these sports are basically working together to find out what's the best thing for us here. And we've heard from NBA and Jeff Passan, Major League Baseball, is also saying there are plans in place. Because Major League Baseball's opening season is, what, 16 days away?
Yeah.
March 26th. Here's Jeff Passan talking about what he's hearing about what baseball is preparing for.
I think there's definitely the opportunity, and I got this from a couple of sources, that if coronavirus happens to spread in a particular metropolitan area, each team's going to have a contingency plan where they can look at another place to play. For example, if a team that has spring training in Arizona, coronavirus spreads in their city in which they normally play, there's a possibility that they could move games to spring training facilities.
So just understand that everyone's trying to figure this thing out as they go along, and I think a lot of reactions of what may or may not happen depends, quite frankly, on what happens on how this spreads in the United States in the next 5 to 10 days, right?
Yeah.
All right. So we'll see what happens there. All of that is the straightest talk we can give you on a very serious situation. Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. So that's the situation in all sports. Meanwhile, there is a floating deadline that may impact one sport significantly.
We have a major deadline looming in the NFL.
They want to see it voted down so that they can negotiate something better.
A lot of people would rather just be told what to think instead of critically think for themselves.
All right, so the deadline for the NFL players to vote on the new CBA, which was approved by the owners and approved to be passed on to the entire body of NFL players by the NFLPA reps, 17-14-1, was Thursday at 11:59 and has now been moved to Saturday at 11:59 to make sure everybody can get the vote. But my gosh, it sure seems like we're seeing some sort of fractured voices coming out of the NFL players as you hear more and more players willing to go to great lengths to try and make sure this thing doesn't pass.
Listen, I mean, talked about this forever because I was involved in it, you know, for my time in the NFL. The hardest thing, this is the hardest as far as union at times because you're dealing with the most players and you're dealing with an unbelievable disparity of money made by the top end. And in regards to the sport, so I know everybody out there, oh, even the low-end guys are getting a lot of money. I get it. This is all in regards to the sport. You have to keep that in context. So it was a big difference of those guys. Now you have one of the guys in Russell Okung who's running for president. There's a vote today for a new president. Eric Winston's not going to be the NFLPA president anymore. And he's out there going to talk to the National Labor Relations Board Monday. He thinks it was bad faith negotiations by Demora Smith. So that's going on. You have another guy who was on that executive committee in Sam Acho who voted, I believe, voted yes for this to move on, but laid out in kind of simplistic terms why this was good for the lower part of the roster and why it wasn't good for the upper part of the roster. You have another guy in Eric Reed who gave this to his lawyer who gave out like a two-page bullet point on why this was bad. This has been the issue with the NFL union. Solidarity. Are we to think with all that's going on right now that the answer is going to be vote this down, we'll all band together, even if it needs to be a work stoppage and we're going to win? I mean, come on. I'm for the players. I want the players to win. But look at the landscape right now. It is ridiculous.
They don't seem to be in a position to fight this the way they would need to. Like, that's been the most unfortunate part about this is it seems like after this went to a vote, all hell's kind of broken loose on the player side. And it just, I mentioned this the other day, like, it's all happening way too publicly. Like, the other side and the owners are just looking at this and going, perfect.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You're helping us by doing this. And you're entitled to your opinion, but it feels like so many people are like, oh, wait a minute, this is happening now? Well, I don't like that. And I can tell you from a lot of people on the NFLPA side, they're like, well, where were you in the process? Because it feels like you're jumping on this thing now as opposed to being an active part of trying to get to where we were with this agreement. Former NFL offensive lineman Jeff Schwartz, who was part of the 2011 stoppage, basically says, look, guys, you're not helping.
You know, together in this process. And that's the biggest thing that I think hurts us is that the owners know that we don't seem very unified because we're bickering on Twitter all the time about the CBA. And then also, and with this on the Twitter part, is that, you know, young players that are new to the process, that weren't around for the last lockout, that look up to, you know, these veterans, when they tweet, when Russell Wilson tweets, when Jarvis Landry, when J.J. Watt, when these guys tweet, younger players assume these players have been through this process and they know what they're talking about. And they just automatically look and say, okay, if this said player says no, I'm going to vote no. When every player should at least do their own research, but at least listen to player reps who have been in every meeting, who have been informing players on what's happening. I just think that we're not unified, and it shows on Twitter all the time. I think it's a bad look for us.
It's a horrible look.
Correct.
A horrible look. And understand what's going on today. Unless they're going to push it, they're voting for a new NFLPA president. Russell Okung is up for it. Giants safety Michael Thomas. Cleveland Browns center J.C. Treader. Bucks linebacker Sam Acho. Now, Eric Winston is going to be done, and he voted for this thing.
Correct.
And I'm not sure, we know at least a few of these guys voted no on this.
Yes.
So if they get elected in as president, where is this thing going? Again, the vote is out there, but we're seeing all kind of public, trying to be public influence out there where this is going to go.
If they voted down, we're basically going back to square one and starting all over again. And if you players, you want to do that, that is certainly your right. And we'll see what happens going forward. Golic and Wingo is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer gives you multiple quote options so you can pick what's right for you. See for yourself at progressive.com. All right, coming up next, we'll continue this discussion. You mentioned Sam Acho, a player rep for the Bucks. He put out a very interesting statement on Twitter that basically explains why there is such a divide, plus why the franchise tag may not be